Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Welcome to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Jake Litarski, joined today by John Litterine. If you're out there on Twitter, you can give John a follow at JonLitterine. You can follow me at JakeSki52. John and I today are going to be making our fantasy picks for the biggest fights of UFC 218 live at what I believe is a brand new Little Caesars Center in Detroit on Saturday, competing with a lot of college football action, but still an excellent card nonetheless. John, thank you for joining me so far. Been a little bit going on in the world of MMA since we last fought. Most notably, I think one of the bigger stories has been Michael Bisping of late. So before we get going on the main card, I just want to ask you, how are you doing? And what are your thoughts on the Bisping turnaround? Did he get back in the octagon too soon?
I'm doing good, thanks. He probably did, but I think he kind of realizes that he's, you know, more or less essentially at the end of his career. And after the loss to GSP, in which he lost his belt, I think he kind of came to the realization that, you know, he might have after this, most recent one against Kelvin Gastelum, I mean, he might have one more fight left, maybe a retirement fight in like London or something like that. And, you know, going from GSP to Kelvin Gastelum in such a short span of time is, you know, it's tough, obviously, for different reasons. You know, GSP with all his skills and Gastelum being so much younger. But I think Bisping is kind of at the point where he realized that he's trending towards the end, and, you know, he had a chance to get, you know, another main event paycheck. And now if he decides that an upcoming fight will be his last one, he can build up to that. And, you know, because he has such a, popular personality and a good personality and good actor and, you know, commentator, and he can do all these different things. He's not going to lack for opportunities outside of the octagon. So
I'm pretty sure he might be back in the booth this weekend, if not very, very soon.
Yeah, he's not going to have a problem, you know, finding work and staying busy. So, we talk about all the time how guys seem to hang on for too long. hopefully he realizes that, you know, he has a chance to, and the UFC for their part, you know, if he does decide to book one more fight and it is his last one, you know, they got to be kind of careful about, you know, who they book him against. He's essentially just gets by on grit and toughness these days, and facing, you know, world-class, you know, all-time greats like GSP, and then, you know, young up-and-coming guys like Gastelum, you know, is not a good idea given where he's at this point in his career. So I was a little surprised that, you know, he did it, but, you know, we know he's never one to turn down a fight. So, you know, if you look at it that way, it's not that big of a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, playing matchmaker at all. Anyone you'd like to see him fight at all? I'm trying to look to see if there are any losses he could avenge. I don't know if Tim Kennedy's around anymore. Vitor Belfort is in the same boat, just barely stringing along.
Yeah, I mean, Vitor Belfort was, that's the kind of name I was thinking of. He's fighting Uriah Hall coming up early next year, I believe. So a name like that, you know, I don't know. Nate Marquardt has a fight scheduled too, I think. But, you know, somebody like that, you don't want to put, you know, a guy who is obviously, you know, turning towards the end of his career against, you know, young top.
No reason to give him Whitaker or Romero at this point, basically.
No. Oh, and, you know, the UFC realizes that. And, but, you know, they're all, you know, booking is about money and you know, eyeballs and opportunity and stuff like that. So they don't, that's why, you know, they don't always make the matchups that make the most sense. But, you know, there are some guys who, you know, if you say they're never going to walk away until somebody literally, you know, says you're not fighting anymore.
Diego,
you know,
Sanchez.
Yeah. You know, or, you know, even Dan Henderson for a while. So, you know, Bisping doesn't strike me as that kind of guy, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, right on. All right, well, that was good to hear your thoughts on that here. But we might as well move in to the UFC 218 card, which, of course, it's always going to be tough to follow up a Madison Square Garden event in which there were three title fights and some two of those belts changing here, or actually all three of them. But so that was a crazy card here. But we're going to try and get into the UFC 218 card, where we've got a featherweight title matchup here in the main event. Max Holloway is going to go up against Jose Aldo for the second time here. Now, Aldo gets this fight because it was originally supposed to be Frankie Edgar. Edgar ended up withdrawing due to injury, and really one of the best matchups. You were just talking about name recognition, John, but one of the best matchups that they could put on in the featherweight division, of course, is Jose Aldo. Now, this fight is... people seem to have a lot of recency bias. At least that's the way I see it, John, because Holloway's 9,300, Aldo's 6,900, which I think is the lowest set. It's the best fighter of all time to ever be under $7,000. And then the odds seem to like Holloway quite a bit, too, at minus 310, Aldo about plus 255. Odds makers like seeing this one finish with minus 185 odds to finish here. I think we're both picking Holloway, but are people counting out Aldo too soon?
Well, the odds makers and the DK salaries will tell you that they are. And, you know, Jose Aldo there's no doubt about it. He caught a break. You know, the injury to Frankie Edgar gives him a chance immediately, you know, to get back in there and win his belt back. And, you know, everything Max Holloway has done over the past 4 years or so, it's really remarkable. 11 wins in a row. You know, we talked about Aldo, Anthony Pettis, Ricardo Lamas, Charles Oliveira, Cub Swanson, and very, very few of those fights have been close. He's dominated most everybody. But like you mentioned, this is, in Aldo, this is a guy who not that long ago went, you know, darn near a decade without losing a fight. And he's the biggest issue, the two big issues that I think go in Holloway's favor is, one is the size difference. You know, Holloway is the much longer fighter, and that's an advantage. I certainly don't think Aldo fought to his capability in the first fight. You know, he said he was banged up.
Talked about the injury, and that seemed to limit the leg kicks, which I don't know if I'm getting ahead of you, John, but that's one of the big factors for me was the lack of leg kicks in the first fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one of his biggest weapons, and, you know, it always has been. And the difference, and the biggest difference or the biggest advantage I imagine Holloway is going to have is in the cardio department. I have a lot more confidence that Holloway will be an effective fighter in the fourth and the fifth round if it gets there than I do Aldo. But In the first fight between the two, Aldo did, you know, he did pretty well the first couple rounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he hurt him. I mean, it didn't look like he was just about to win the fight at any point, but he did do some damage, and I feel like people are forgetting about that.
They are, and the other thing is, it certainly didn't look like his, you know, the Conor McGregor loss, and I've said this before, Aldo's loss to McGregor, he kind of looked defeated before he got in there. His body language wasn't good, and, you know, the whole thing was kind of a mess. He didn't look that way against, you know, in the first fight against Holloway. Mm-hmm. You know, he looked strong. He just, Holloway is really good, and the scary thing about Holloway is he's only getting better. You know,
for he's a kid only 25.
Only 25, a kid who's so young and has improved, you know, so rapidly over the past 4 years or so, that he's young enough that it's reasonable to expect him to continue to get better. Now, like you said, Aldo throws a lot of kicks. He didn't in the first fight, which certainly limits his attack. But, you know, you look at it from the other, you know, the other side, and Holloway is just about as good as anybody in the sport at throwing, you know, consistent combinations and awkward angles and that kind of stuff. Because he's not a guy who you would say is, you know, a traditional power puncher. You know, he's not like a true one-punch knockout guy. You know, he doesn't have that kind of power. A
lot of volume, 5.79 significant strikes landed per minute for Holloway.
Yeah, he outworks you. And Aldo is going to have to get inside, you know, to land those leg kicks. Holloway is 4 inches taller. Aldo has a 1-inch reach advantage, but that doesn't mean a whole lot when Holloway has a 2-inch leg reach advantage, you know. So this is a close fight. It's way, way closer than the odds and the salaries would indicate. If you're looking at it from a DK perspective, I think there's I would feel more far more comfortable with Aldo at his salary than I would with Holloway at his. But after everything Holloway's done over the last 4 years, he certainly deserves to be a favorite. You know, he's put together a body of work that, you know, he gets the benefit of the doubt at this point. You know, for a while, people thought maybe there were, you know, this whole entire thing in this run, there was some flukiness to it, but there's not. I mean, the guy's really, really good. And, you know, although, like I said, he's catching a break. He gets a chance to redeem himself. It's not often you lose a title fight and, you know, 5 months later, 6 months later, get a shot to regain your belt against, you know, the same exact guy. So he's going to get a chance here. And I expect this to probably be a close, long fight. And in a close, long fight, I think Holloway's cardio gives him the edge. But again, little difference. And both the Vegas odds and the DK salaries are a bit out of whack, as you mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my first initial DraftKings lineup, I did call it the A lineup, if you will. I have three heavy favorites. I will get to that later on in the show, talking about the big favorites and what to think about them. But I have three guys $9,000 or above. And the only way I could do that was by using Aldo at $6,900. And even if he doesn't win, I think volume-wise and the fact that it's a five-round fight, if he lasts a little bit longer, he could still land enough significant strikes to potentially get some DraftKings points. So I just think there's, at $6,900, there's so much, and he could win. I mean, we're both picking Holloway. I think four out of the five of us on the staff are picking Holloway. Staff picks will come on the website right about the same time we're publishing the show here. I think there's enough volume there that he could get you maybe 50 DraftKings points in a loss, which would, it almost reminds me of, remember when Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor fought for the second time, Diaz was much cheaper on DraftKings, and, you know, McGregor got the win bonus, but it was Diaz that had so much significant strikes that it ended up with 60 or 70 fantasy points and is actually helpful. I think we could see something similar to that here. So, I understand using Holloway on DraftKings. I think it'd be a decent tournament play because I think a lot of DFS players are going to see this fight the same way as us. So they might be shy away from someone as expensive as Holloway at $9,300, and that'll keep his ownership percentage down. And like I said, we both think he's going to win, but I think there's a ton of value in using Aldo on DraftKings.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if Aldo was overwhelmed. You know, I'd be surprised if this was, either way, a lopsided fight. I expect it to be close.
Very, very close. Well, let's head to the co-main, John, where we got a banger. We got a pair of heavyweights, and I've been excited for this fight for a very, very long time because I can't help but get excited when I watch any film of Francis the Predator Ngannou. He's going to take on. He's the young up-and-comer going up against the heavyweight staple. I think calling Alistair Overeem a gatekeeper would be not quite fair to him because he is the elite of the division. Both these guys are looking to get their shot at Stipe Miocic if Stipe and the UFC ever get their contract negotiations sorted out. But this is essentially a title eliminator fight. The next guy should get Stipe. And the odds makers and DraftKings have this quite a bit in favor of the young guy. Francis Ngannou's 9,100. Overeem's just 7,100. Ngannou a minus 245, minus 250 favorite. The one thing that we can all agree on is this fight's probably not going to see the final bell. The odds to finish are minus 365. John, who are you picking and how do you see this one playing out if you can even analyze these two heavyweights? Because anyone can connect.
You know, I'm all in on Francis Ngannou. He's one of my few guys. We talk about this a lot. I got a few guys. He's one. Steven Thompson's another. Kamaru Usman. I got a few of them. He's one of them. This guy, I think he's the scariest guy in the entire roster. What we have seen from this guy, Ngannou, that is in a short amount of time, is absolutely unbelievable. The power, the submission skills, the Kimura he slapped on Anthony Hamilton out of nowhere, just under a year ago.
That was insane. It was basically a Kimura that he put in place while standing up.
And he's a guy who is essentially, learning as he goes, really. You know, a guy who got a late start to the sport, before he entered the UFC. Very limited experience and, limited experience against, anything even close to, quality competition. Now, as good as he looks, and he's certainly my pick, and I'm all in on him. You got to remember, Alistair Overeem is not a gatekeeper, like you mentioned. The state of the heavyweight division is a little awkward in the sense that, there's a good, 7, 8, maybe a little less than that, maybe, more like 5 or 6, guys below Stipe Miocic who are kind of grouped together. There's not a whole lot of separation. If any of them fought any of the other ones and you said, either of them could probably win, he's jumbled in there. But I guess he has to take this fight. I mean, I don't think he can say no. He probably gets a title shot, if he wins. So, he can't say no, but the problem is even when he does well, Overeem gets hit a lot. He doesn't move well. Obviously, he has a ton of power, always has, with, his striking background, has a ton of power, but
The guy's been competing forever. He's 37 years old and has, 58 professional fights under his belt, on the Sherdog page, trains out of Jackson Wink. So, that aspect of his game is solid, but like you said, John, I just don't know if I can pick against the Predator at any point.
No, but the problem, if you stand in front of this guy, meaning Ngannou, I don't see how you're going to survive, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very tough one.
At least from what we've seen so far, the only two ways I think you can beat him is one, that one punch knockout type, which could happen to anybody.
Like he almost did to Stipe. That happened in their first fight. He knocked him down.
Right. That can happen in any fight. So, those are kind of hard to predict. And the other thing would be to wrestle, to try and wrestle the guy. But the guy's so big and so strong and such, we're going off limited viewings. He hasn't, we have not seen this guy at all.
I've got 5 fights in the UFC. And if you'd have counted DraftKings points back in 2015, he's had 88 or more DraftKings points in every single fight, and he's had back-to-back first-round stoppages. So
3 straight first-round stoppages.
3? Oh, geez, 3 straight. I forgot about the submission. Yeah, wow.
Oh, yeah, he's this guy is something else. And we're gonna get a better idea of how truly legitimate this guy is. And I'll tell you right now, if he destroys Overeem and he gets a title shot, I'm picking him over Stipe Miocic.
Oh, yeah. Because,
I mean, and I like Stipe, and I think Stipe is the best. Him and Kane are the best athletes in the division, But I'm telling you, this guy is something else. Ngannou is one of a true handful of guys who you could legitimately say have, like, top of the mark, like, lead the company superstar potential. Mm-hmm. And there's only, like, five or six of them. There are not many of them, but this guy is one of them. And again, that's why they have the fights. You know, we've seen this before, and we've seen it all come crashing down. And he's 31 years old, so he turned 31 in September. So he got a late start, like we said, and, you know, he's essentially in his athletic prime now. You know, he's not a 22 or 23-year-old kid, so I understand the decision to try and push him, you know, more than some of these other young kids have been pushed in the past. Mm-hmm. But this guy is terrifying. Yes. And, you know, Overeem gets hit too much. He gets hit too much even when he wins. So unless he wrestles and Ngannou, you know, turns out he totally can't handle anybody trying to take him down repeatedly, I don't see how he handles his power.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you, John. The laws of human strength and athleticism and even speed for somebody this big do not apply to Francis Ngannou. He is he's got a wingspan about the same of John Bones Jones. The guy is, you know, typical expectations or principles of jiu-jitsu, anything, you know, he can come into this fight, Francis Ngannou can, without being as technically sound in any area and more than make up for it with his strength and athleticism. So I very much see where you're coming from with this one, John. I'm picking Ngannou too at 9,100. He's not even the most expensive guy on the card because we do got to give over him a little bit of respect. But Ngannou's going to be in just about every single DraftKings lineup I make it, cash or tournament. Tournament because I don't want to miss out on a potentially huge point total. Cash game because I think he's as close to a lock to get you 80, 90 fantasy points as it gets. So Ngannou, we both really like on DraftKings here. Let's move on, though, John. Got a flyweight fight next. This is an interesting one. This is another, essentially, what I think is a title eliminator because Joseph Benavidez has that ACL injury. I don't think he's going to be able to fight for a while yet. So we're looking at Henry Cejudo against Sergio Pettis. Cejudo, 9,200. Pettis, a cool 7,000. Pretty cheap. Cejudo, minus 255. Pettis, plus 215. Vegas actually likes this one to finish at about minus 245, which is a little surprising for me, given that it's only three rounds. But who are you picking, and how is this one playing out?
I'm picking Cejudo to win, but I'm not crazy about either of them. Mm-hmm. Pettis simply has a cheap salary, but I don't think he's going to win. So you know that eliminate. And not only do I not think he's going to win, there's you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's dominated. Because Cejudo has that kind of ability and game at times. So that's why I'm not crazy about Pettis. And, you know, Cejudo, 9,200 is a lot for a guy who, you know, has essentially been inconsistent, really, mm-hmm. you know, when you think about it. And
yeah, the striking's, you know, improved. I'll give him that. But you're right, a little bit up and down against, you know, some of the top guys.
That's the big thing for Cejudo. You know, he's a gold medal Olympic wrestler, so.
Always has that to fall back on, yep.
Yeah, the guy's not going to forget. You know, the guy is obviously a world-class wrestler, always will be. But his striking in his most recent win over Wilson Hayes in September, so again, you're real short turnaround for him, too. You're looking at less than 2 months for him. Less than 3 months. But his striking in the Hayes fight was markedly improved, which has always been the big question because – you know, he's obviously a world-class grappler and another guy who picked up the sport late because, you know, he was wrestling, you know, his entire life. So if his striking advancements are legitimate and as far as the, you know, the domination we saw in the Hayes fight isn't a fluke, with Benavidez getting older in age and, like you said, banged up, I think it would be pretty clear that Cejudo would be the second best flyweight in the world. Mm-hmm. And this fight means a lot more for Cejudo than it does for Sergio Pettis. And the simple reason is just because Sergio Pettis is 24 years old. Mm-hmm. And if you're 24 years old and you know he's getting a huge opportunity, four fight winning streak. But if you're 24 years old and you lose, you know, you have time to get back on the horse, you know, and build yourself back up. So in that case, you know, this is a bigger fight for Cejudo than it is for Pettis. Not crazy about either of them. Agree with you in the sense that I'm surprised at the odds to finish. I would think there's a decent chance this thing sees the final bell. But I don't know. This fight doesn't do a ton for me. I don't know why. I've never been the biggest Pettis supporter, even though he's shown more good than bad. But I don't know. This is kind of like a meh fight for me. I'm not.
Yeah. It's not like the next one we're going to talk about here in just a second. I do have to make a correction.
The next one's going to be an all out disaster somehow.
Yeah. So I do need to make a correction. I was looking at the fights go to a decision marks. The odds to finish are +200. So for me, Vegas agrees. That sounds right.
That sounds about right.
Okay. Yeah, that's about right to me. And then for me, that reason is, you know, I like Cejudo to win as well. I think he'll be able to, you know, probably rack up more points and even takedowns if he has to against Pettis. I think Pettis is good enough that this fight should see the final bell. And, you know, if this were for some reason a 5-round fight, like if this were main eventing like a Fox card, then I would maybe pick one of these guys on DraftKings because there'll be two more full rounds to potentially get strikes or takedowns in Cejudo's case. Well, Cejudo can do both. But for now, I'm fading this fight. I don't have either of these guys in any of my lineups right now.
Well, if you look at it this way, I know you're with me. You know, I would spend $6,900 on Aldo all day before I spend $7,000 on Pettis.
Yeah, exactly. And that's an either-or that, you know, fantasy owners looking for salary relief are going to have to make. And I would take Aldo because definitely the 5-round fight and, you know, more opportunities to score points and just a better guy. So, yeah, we're definitely on the same page at this one, John. But we alluded to it a second ago. We got to get to this lightweight fight candidate here. It's a candidate I think will be for fight of the year, even coming in December. I'm stoked for this fight. Eddie Alvarez, Justin Gaethje. Alvarez is 7,500, Gaethje 8,700. Gaethje's been on quite a streak and had a very nice UFC debut against Michael Johnson, one of the better fights of the year as well. Gaethje, the former World Series of Fighting world champion, going to test himself with a step up in competition. Gaethje is a -175 favorite, and he's 1,200 more than Alvarez on DraftKings. Alvarez a +155 dog. Odds to finish are -210. These two are going to stand and bang like rock'em sock'em robots until someone goes down. And even when someone goes down, he's probably going to get back up two or three times and bite down on the mouthpiece and do it again. John, how tough is this brawl to predict?
Virtually impossible, and that's why that's the main reason that I picked Alvarez. You know, I will say that if this fight plays out how you just described, there may be no better fighter on the planet than Justin Gaethje. His ability to, you know, take punishment and deliver punishment and somehow win fights it's disturbing, you know, for lack of a better word. I don't know how he does it. And I've been critical of Gaethje before in the sense that I've said that he's a one-dimensional brawler, which he is. And he is by choice because he has a wrestling background. And, you know, if he wanted to use it, he, you know, could be and is a well-rounded fighter. And, I heard or I saw somewhere Eddie Alvarez say something the other day that he just, you know, essentially doesn't care what's going
to
happen. And
I know, I'm trying to look up that quote now, actually.
He's just going to go in and just, you know, go to war and totally, you know, disregard everything and we'll see what happens. And that's what Michael Johnson did against Gaethje. And that's quite honestly my Michael Johnson lost. Johnson had chances to win that fight. Gaethje survived. Johnson kept fighting like an idiot, and he ultimately lost. So I'm taking Alvarez for two main reasons. The first one being I've been hard on Gaethje, and you know I'm not backing off now. And the second is you can't predict brawls like a brawl like this at all. And when you can't predict a brawl, I usually take the guy who gives you the better payoff. And in this case, I'm really surprised, actually, the difference in both the salaries and the odds. You know, Eddie Alvarez, you know, former UFC, you know, champion. And I've seen Justin Gaethje in fights against what I'll politely call, you know, marginal, you know, talent opposition-wise, and almost lose because of the way he fights. And he has openly admitted in the past that, you know, he's going to get knocked out one day because of the way he fights. And
it could very well come on Saturday.
It, easily could. And it, you know, this is gonna, these good times for him are going to end eventually because, you know, because of how he fights. And no, we are, on the other hand, though, we've seen guys, we've seen the UFC guys in the UFC get released. Jared Rosholt was the biggest example. Guys who, you know, are racking up wins, but they fight such a boring style. The UFC just gets rid of them. Mm-hmm. You know, look at Gaethje. He's parlayed, you know, his violent style into, you know, a job, you know, coaching tough and coaching the Ultimate Fighter, excuse me. And, you know, now I'm sure he has a, you know, very, very lucrative contract and he got money for coaching tough. And, you know, now he's in a huge fight. So, you know, he'll continue to get huge fights
like this.
He's going to get a huge fight even if he loses.
You can't roll him out there on a not pay-per-view card anymore. He's going to be on pay-per-view for the rest of his UFC career.
Yeah, or he's going to be headlining a Fox. You know, either way, it's a spot where he's going to get a bunch of money. So, exactly. You know, and if he loses, you know, to Alvarez, you know what everybody's going to say. Well, it was a bloody war. He took a ton of punishment. He took, you know, more punishment than 99.99% of the world could take. And, you know, then he got finished. So does it even look that bad that he lost it, you know, if he battles, you know, as hard as he's going to? So, you know, there are both ways to look at it. And some guys are real. And Alvarez is in the same boat in the sense that they're more about producing entertaining fights than they are sometimes about winning or losing. But the problem is Alvarez needs to win this fight more than Gaethje does. And, you know, that's why if he would be better served to try and wrestle or, you know, try and not act like a total fool, but it's not going to happen.
So here's the quote that I was looking for. I'll do my best with the bleeper here, but Eddie Alvarez, I'm going to be honest. I don't bleeping know. I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what's going to happen. I will say this. It's going to be bleeping nuts because I spent a great deal of this training camp working, not giving a bleep myself. So...
yeah, it essentially means he doesn't care, and he's just going to go in there and just try and beat the holy hell out of him.
Yeah, which is great for fight fans, not the best plan for Alvarez. You would think that he would try to utilize his wrestling a little bit more, but I mean, we've talked about this in the past. Gaethje can wrestle before. He's got wrestling credentials, it just hasn't quite, and he just refuses to rely on those skills. So maybe Alvarez gets that aspect of his game going as a fight. The fan in me says I don't want that to happen. But, man, at 7,500, I'll tell you, I'm throwing him in my lineup too. And I actually went ahead and picked this fight. I'll take someone. I like Alvarez's body of work, his experience, whether they've been wins or losses. He's been fighting the elite fighters for years now. And I think he'll have the better game plan if, I mean, I know what he says he's going to do, but he has to know in the back of his mind that that's not the greatest idea. Maybe he's just going to come out and brawl for the fans, but in a fight where there's going to be fists flying and the outcome is a coin toss, I will take the $7,500 fighter.
That's pretty much what it comes down to. It's more just a payoff thing. The only thing I will acknowledge is if this ends up being the kind of fight that we're predicting, nobody fights better in those kind of fights than Gaethje. So, you know, take that for what you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gaethje will get hit in the chin over and over again. And Johnson clocked him a bunch of times, but he just kept going. And, you know, he was wobbled so bad, I think he messed up his backflip he does afterwards. But maybe we'll see him backflip against Saturday. I don't think either you or I are banking on it, at least if you're playing Daily Fantasy for the contest. But, John, kicking off the pay-per-view, we got a quick touch on this women's strawweight matchup between Michelle Waterson, Tesha Torres. Vegas and DraftKings like Torres to win this one a lot. 8,600 for Torres, 7,600 for Waterson. Waterson's plus 170. Torres is minus 200 in the betting odds. Probably a fight that's not going to go to the finish here. Who you got?
Waterson, for the same reason I have Alvarez. I think it's like essentially a pick 'em fight, and I'm surprised at how lopsided the salaries are. You know, I just think Waterson is a much better value play. And the main reason being that as good as Tesha Torres is, she's really just a kickboxer, and she's, you know, I mean, no woman in the 115-pound division is large, but you know, she's really tiny. She's given up a couple inches to Michelle Waterson, and Waterson is a good wrestler and a very, very good submission specialist. That's really her bread and butter. And I'm interested to see how Tisha's takedown defense holds up. It's just over 69% her UFC career, so you know, it's not great. you know, that's a little six, seven, it's just about 70% is, it's not horrible, but it, you know, the elite guys are, you know, up in the, you know, the mid to high 80s. So it's not a terrific number. The one thing I will say about Torres is she's, you know, she's deceptively strong for, you know, a woman who is, you know, all of 5 foot nothing. She's stronger than it would lead you to believe. But I will say, I think Waterson is one of those fighters who is willing to implement a game plan to win. Like we just talked about how Alvarez isn't going to do it. I think Waterson will. And, you know, again, essentially for me, more or less a pick'em fight, but, you know, better return on your investment for Waterson. But this is a good fight and one that's really isn't being talked about essentially anywhere. You know, two good women who really in a division, you know, that's now wide open with, you know, Joanna losing her belt, two women that really aren't all that far away from the title shot.
Yeah, speaking of Joanna losing her belt, she lost that belt to Rose Namajunas, of course. Michelle Waterson fought Namajunas in her last fight, was submitted in the second round via rear naked choke. And let's see, what do I have here? Torres did fight Namajunas in 2016, lost that fight via decision, but still got in 61 strikes. But of course, Namajunas then and Namajunas at each of those points are very, very separate spots in the career. I went with you, or I actually picked the favorite in Torres in this one. She seems like someone who I've underestimated and counted out a lot, but the Tiny Tornado, you know, you mentioned her not having a ton of size, but strength for her size and core strength, and I think she'll be able to do it just enough where if the fight gets to the ground, she might be able to go ahead and avoid some of the submissions of Waterson. It's a very interesting dilemma here. I mean, Torres has never, it's a small UFC career and a small sample size, never been submitted in her 10 fights. The only fight she lost was to Rose by decision. And she's been hot. She beat Angela Hill, who I think pretty highly of still, although she's hit a rough patch. You know, beat Rose. She actually beat Rose Namajunas in Invicta all the way back in 2013. Has a win against Paige VanZant, Felice Herrig, fighters that are contending. So I go with Torres, but from a DraftKings perspective, I either use Waterson or fade this fight. I'm right with you. I don't like Waterson enough to quite pick her, but I think it'd be great for the UFC if she wins. She's very marketable. The fans do love her. She's, you know, she's got a great personality. Cool girl, fun to watch. But I'm picking Torres and fading this one in DFS because, again, it's a three-round fight that's probably going to see the final bell. Can either woman get enough strikes in or takedowns to get you a solid DraftKings return on your investment? I'm doubtful of that. Both have excellent camps. Tesha Torres is an American top team. Namajunas at Jackson Wink. It's a closer fight than they indicate. I'm going Torres. You're going Waterson. But this, like we can agree that this is a toss up here at the end here. But before we wrap up with the show here, there are a couple DraftKings specific things I want to get to. I need a DraftKings value play for this, John. You know, we both like Alvarez at 7,300. Waterson gives you some salary relief at 76. But any other live dogs on the card that you're looking to throw in your lineups?
You know, there are a couple, and more because, and this is always dangerous, but more because I don't think the favorites are all that great. And that's the first two fights on the card overall, and that's the Amanda Cooper, Angela Magana fight and the Justin Willis, Alan Crowder fight. Both Crowder and Magana are pretty hefty underdogs. Crowder's 7,400, Magana's 7,100. I don't think either of them are particularly great, but nor do I think their opponent, Justin Willis for Crowder or Amanda Cooper for Magana, are really all that good either. So, you know, if you're struggling, you know, that there you have some higher salary fighters that you're insistent that you want to get in, you know, throwing in one of those underdogs in one of the first two fights might not be the worst thing in the world, only because, you know, the competition they're facing isn't exactly the stiffest.
Yeah, I was admittedly a little bit perplexed by Cooper's salary when I first saw it at 9,100. I'm not quite sure her price is the same as Francis Ngannou, and I'm taking Ngannou over Cooper 100% of the time. I don't even make a you know, ABCDEFG lineup with Cooper in just for a tournament strategy. I'm not quite buying it. I'd make that Ngannou decision every time. But as far as value for me, one that was interesting to me was Charles Oliveira against Paul Felder. And I've underestimated Oliveira before, and he's came through with a submission in the past. The Will Brooks fight comes to mind. Felder's 8,500. Oliveira is, now there's Charles and Alex Oliveira both fighting on this, so don't be sure not to mix them up. But Charles Oliveira, 7,700. He opened at plus 130. He's only a plus 115 dog. So, you know, the first thing I look for at value is looking for math. And I try to see the narrowest odds with the highest salary discrepancy and match that up. And of course, Oliveira fits that bill. Now, Paul Felder has never been submitted, but it's not, he doesn't have any crazy wins over high name opponents. You know, he's fought some good fighters in the past here, but you know, not quite the elite of the division. So on top of Alvarez, on top of Aldo, for salary relief, I did toss Charles Oliveira in that lineup. Am I crazy or not so much?
No, I picked him. I picked him and went outright. And you know, the biggest issue is Charles Oliveira has been, you know, consistency, really. Just up and down, you know, strong performances, you know, followed by, you know, lousy performances. You know, like you said, defeated Will Brooks in his last fight, looked brilliant. You know, fights before that essentially no-showed, you know, against Ricardo Lamas and Anthony Pettis. So up and down. And this is your classic grappler versus striker, you know, matchup. Charles Oliveira, 14 career wins by submission, is one of the best ground specialists in the entire sport. And Paul Felder, you know, your traditional, you know, Muay Thai hard-hitting kickboxing style. So, you know, I agree with you. I picked Oliveira, and there are some cards, you know, we break down and you look at where you look at all the salaries and, you know, you say, there's not a whole lot that I would really term, you know, good quality value. You don't have that issue with this card. There are a lot of, you know, DK wise, at least, underdogs who, you know, you could say are live plays, in which case, as always, we advocate that you make multiple lineups and just, you know, throw together a bunch of different combinations.
Yeah, you make multiple lineups for this type of sport, especially because, you know, if you lose a decision or one of your guys gets lost on a fluky knockout, you're not winning that tournament. And you want to keep your hope of winning that tournament and getting that big payday alive as long as possible. So in the sense of Charles Oliveira, I've got a couple either-ors for you. What do you think about Dracar Close and David Tamir? This is another one where Close is only a plus 160 favorite. And actually, now that I'm looking at these odds, just to backtrack a sec, I'm seeing Oliveira at minus 105. So he's almost getting pick'em status. Even the site Bookmaker has him as his minus 130 favorite over Felder. I mean, it just could just be the way that they're taking in money. But it's looking like Oliveira's a pick'em. But comparing Oliveira at 7,700 to Dracar Close at 7,800, is Oliveira your choice in the lineup?
Oh, definitely. Because I picked Oliveira, and I picked Close's opponent, David Timur. So no doubt about that for me. Timur, undefeated in the UFC. His last fight, decision Lando Venata in March, who entered with, you know, a lot of hype, you know, for that fight. A lot of pop for Timur. Good striker, a lot of power. I think he's, you know, I think he's going to win outright, which, you know, makes him certainly, makes Oliveira certainly the better play for those two.
Absolutely. So the next one, it comes down to picking favorites, because if you use guys like Alvarez or Oliveira, you're going to have some salary room, and you got to pick between favorites. And a lot of it's going to be a guy that's really well known against a guy that's not so well known. So, like, for example, you have to make a choice between Max Holloway at 9,300 or somebody like Dominic Reyes, who's one of the biggest favorites on the card, at minus 525. If you have to put one of those guys in your lineup and you only have the salary for one, do you have a preference there?
You know, something like that is a little more personal preference, because when you see a guy early in the card who's such a big salary like that, it's generally because their opponent's not very good, to be honest with you, because they're just, it's not a high profile fight. It's usually guys who don't have a lot of time with the company, in which case we advocate making multiple lineups, because all you need is one guy walking across the cage and, you know, stepping the wrong way and his knee popping out, and, you know, your whole entire night is over. You know, you get nothing from one guy who, you know, takes one wrong step or gets popped with one punch, and all of a sudden, you know, your lineup goes to hell. So that, you know, but then again, it's like, what do you want to take a risk on? Because Obviously, you have way, way more, you know, of a resume with Holloway. You've seen what he's done, you know, and then you have, you know, another guy who in Reyes who, you know, you have who has limited exposure. So, you know, in that case, it's more of a personal preference. But if you were making multiple lineups, you can always flip flop.
Mm-hmm. All right. So one more in a similar sense. I actually, in my lineup, I went with Reyes because I agree it's risky, but at minus 525, Vegas isn't going to have this completely wrong. And then, of course, the odds to finish on that fight are minus 470. So I went with Reyes just because I think, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, the Holloway-Aldo discrepancy is bigger than it should be. And I think Holloway's a little bit overpriced, though I think he's going to win. I don't think Holloway's going to win by first round stoppage, and I think Reyes probably has a better chance of that. So I went Reyes on this end. Another one that pops up, of course, we both love Francis Ngannou at 9,100 here. Think actually he's got a pretty good shot at getting that first round knockout. But a fighter that's similarly priced that's 9,000 is Razak Alassane against Saba Homasi. Alassane is a minus 250 favorite, so not quite as big as Reyes, and the fight's got minus 300 odds to finish. That's Ngannou for you, like it is for me?
It is. And in these kind of situations, the thing that generally the first thing I look at and comes to mind is, you know, what we know about some of these guys. And, you know, we don't have much exposure of you know, and much experience of some of these early guys early on in the card. And you look at a guy like Ngannou, and, you know, we've seen the power he has, and we've seen all that. And then you have an opponent of his in Overeem, who's been fighting for 100 years, and, you know, gets hit a lot. So, yes, you know, you want to, you know, tendencies of those two guys, as opposed to Alassane, who, you know, who has all of 8 professional fights under his belt. Mm-hmm. You know, do you really want to take that risk that $9,000 salary that he costs is truly legitimate? You know, is he really as worthy of $9,000? You know, mm-hmm. $9,000 salary, minus 265 favorite. He's probably going to win, you know, but do you really want to take that chance at, you know, early on in the card when there are so many other fighters who, if you know, you're a semi-serious MMA fan, you've seen Alistair Overeem fight 100 times, you know, you know what kind of fighter he is, you know what kind of fight you get, you know, what to look for his opponents. So and that's not just, you know, DFS and not just MMA. It's really fantasy sports in general. It's just, you, no one knows how any of this is ever going to play out, which is why we all play all this stuff. But it's how much information can you get when you set your lines for football every week?
Yeah.
You know, you look at the matchups, you see who's playing who, and you try and, you know, if it, you know, team can't contain, or, you know, look at the New York Giants. They can't guard a tight end. So if they're playing, you know, a team, you know, with a, you know, a garbage tight end, the tight end scores against the Giants every single week. All of a sudden, the guy who stinks becomes a good value play.
So, I'm all over Jared Cook and DFS this week, yeah, by the way, but that's besides the point.
The Giants have had a rough year. So, you know, you try and get as much information as you can, and, you know, you make the best decisions you can. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but that's why we're here, to try and help you out.
Yeah, we at least give you some of the background on these guys for the casual fans or guys that might be interested in playing DraftKings for the first time. And you know, the Alassane, I threw him in there because, you know, I'm not entirely – Saba Homasi got smoked pretty badly by Tim Means in the second round. And, you know, he is an American top team product, though, with a decent amount of fights under his belt, so you never know. But – anyway, that's going to wrap things up. Thank you so much for joining me, John. This is a blast discussing all of these main fights and maybe some of these under-the-radar ones that can help be the game changer in helping your bankroll and winning on DraftKings this week. Ton of action this week. Hopefully these so there's some big contests on there. I mean, I'm just kind of scrolling through the lobby here, and the biggest one I'm seeing, they've got the Hook. That is 17,600 entries. $8 entry there, so that's one I'm looking to get involved in. I always like the strike 2 or 3 entry max, where you can use some of the combinations that we talked about of favorites and hope that one of those hits big. But that's going to wrap things up. Thanks again for listening to the RotoWire Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Once again, if you want to follow John on Twitter, that's at JonLitterine, at John Littering. I'm Jake Litarski at JakeSki52. John, thanks so much for joining you. We're going to be back before UFC 219, which is Chris Cyborg and Holly Holm. That'll be in Las Vegas at T-Mobile. Until then, good luck, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for joining, John.
All right, guys. Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.